I'm like, ugh.
Well, I hope we have a better outtake than that. That was pretty sad.
Oh, we've got plenty. We've got plenty. If you want antics and tomfoolery and hijinks, you've come to the right place, my friend.
Okay. You've been holding it in?
I've been by court order holding it. But if you want to let the cat out of the bag and release those shackles, I'll do terrible, unsanitary things.
To this podcast?
To this podcast and all its listeners.
One by one. Just knock on the door. Just, Jack, come to do unsanitary things to you.
like Jay and Silent Bob.
That's right.
Going door to door.
But the opposite. Because they beat people up.
I'd play it by ear.
Yeah, some people you beat up, and others you would. I guess beating someone up is unsanitary, also.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I would just lick their face.
Just lean. Just leave, open the door.
Just lean real close, and hey, buddy, thanks for listening.
The person who actually listens to the podcast is the one answering the door, and hope no children answer the door. Otherwise, you'd be in trouble again.
Hey, little man, you taste like peanuts.
Oh. That's getting edited out if this ever gets in.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop miniature skirmish game from Mantic Games. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Harper and Jack Fike. I am your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen.
Welcome to the 72nd episode of Dead Zone the Podcast for July 2017. In this episode, we have a big coming out party for Unearthed Intel. What's that, you ask? Well, listen and find out. As always, you can go to deadzonegame.podbean.com for the audio, or you can go to youtube.com/c/deadzonethepodcast for the video version of the show. And now on to the episode.
And welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast, episode 72. My name's Jack.
And I'm Rob.
And together we're the comedy duo, Jack and Rob.
Yes, this is Dead Zone the Podcast, and another episode is beginning. And it's, what is it? It's July, isn't it? It's hot. It's very hot.
Yes, hot and rainy.
But this episode's a little different because we have a special surprise.
We have our main topic, the thing that Rob has been alluding to, has been overhyping and overselling to the point where it's almost an embarrassment to bring up.
I don't think so. I think this deserves all the overhype. We've been promising this for probably a year, if not more, maybe since the beginning of our podcast.
That's 4 years ago, Rob. I don't believe that we were making our own house rules for a game that hadn't even been released on Kickstarter yet.
It may have been, because yes, it's finally coming out. We've been promising our book on house rules, and it is coming out. You'll be able to find the link in the show notes, and I'm sure we'll be plastering it everywhere else because we're very happy with it. It's all of our unearthed intel. It's all of our house rules put into one place. And we actually had to edit some of it because some of our house rules became real rules in the last FAQ, but there's still enough here to really wet your whistle. And we're going to go over some stuff here, and yeah, we'll discuss it like we discussed the FAQ so poorly.
Yeah, we'll make some mistakes, and you know what? People will just go, oh, hey, guys, you kind of misunderstood that there. The wording could have been better, but no, hey.
And they'll be very reasonable about that, and they won't make fun of us, and they won't, like, tear us down on social medias.
Oh, no, God, no. God, no. Who would do that?
Or on our own podcast.
Yes, sometimes people want to vilify us on our own forum, and that's okay. That's dirty pool in my books, but you know what?
Dirty pool. This dossier, as I like to call it, is 40 pages of rules here. And we'll start right at the beginning. We separate into different sections. And our first section is core rules. And in the core rules, our first thing is random object placement. Because the way objects are placed like the objectives, I should say, not objects, are placed in the game, well, it's always the same, right? So we like the idea of randomizing that. It may make it unfair pretty quickly, I would think. Sometimes you can roll for your, to make it, you're rolling it just like you would roll for putting down, crates, but you're doing it for the one VP and two VP objectives in the game.
Yeah, I think we can say right off the hop, this is just to mix stuff up and to, it's not to make the game better per se or more of a tournament game. It's more of, hey, we've been playing Dead Zone for, you know, a few years. What if? That's what most of these rules are, to really just take Dead Zone by the scruff of its neck and shake it vigorously until its gold coins pour out.
Yeah.
Or is that a leprechaun?
Yeah, same thing.
I get too confused all the time.
Yeah, we just it definitely isn't for tournament play because this is totally unfair. It's totally random. You could really screw up the game, but it just makes it much more interesting when all of a sudden you find yourself with all the objectives on the other side of the board and you're like, well, I really got to work my way over there to get some points here or to deny the enemy some points. So it just really throws a monkey wrench in the system, which is fun. So Jack, please, what is the next rule that we thought of?
This one harkens back to version one when the way that turns worked was different. It used to be one side, then the other side would move, and you can hear we've discussed this about 100 times in previous podcasts how that was not great. This is the next rule here is alternative initiative rules for mixing stuff up. Now it does still pertain to Dead Zone in its current iteration too, if you really want to, you know, you really want to spice stuff up, but it more so it's an artifact of version one.
Well, yeah, the way it works now is one model goes, the other model goes, and there's command dice to mix it up. It's great. But this is, it's a ripoff of the bolt action system, if you really must know. It's the putting the chits in the bag and pulling them out. And we like the idea of randomizing the activations. Once again, I don't know if you could tell, but me and Jack are very pro-random. And this would really make the game interesting again for that kind of stuff. But once again, not tournament play. This is if you want to just spice it up a bit in the bedroom. I think that's what this is for. It's marital aids for Dead Zone.
Yeah, if you really want to make it seedy, that is exactly what it is.
That's what this whole book is, really.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much the next one. The next one is something that we think version 3.0 for Dead Zone should be, and that's the new armor and new AP rules. We really don't like the way that armor and AP work right now, especially since having an AP weapon against an unarmored target doesn't help you in any way. Whereas, you know, you'd think you'd armor piercing against a human would without armor on should, maybe be more effective. So this one, we have, the idea is that, AP will add dice to your attack instead of reducing armor. So an AP2 weapon would give you 5 dice instead of 3 dice as a base. And then your armor stat would add dice for your survive roll. So if you had armor 2, you'd have 5 dice. Or if you had armor 1, you'd have 4 dice for your survive roll. And I think that's a really clean way to do it, really. Like, I can't think of a cleaner way to do it. Even the way now is more complex than this. And it's just something that we think, hopefully the rules committee is listening, and that is something you might think about for 3.0, because that would just simplify it so much.
It turns your attack. It gives it a modifier, just like the other modifiers that are already being used. And then your defense is modified again in the same way that's already established in the game. It allows you to add more dice against the target, no matter what, as that's the ability of that weapon, or that's the benefit of having the armor piercing, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do so much damage. It's still up to the dice. I think it's a nice, simple, clean fun rule.
Yeah, I think that is hopefully something that they'll look at. And same with the next thing, right, Jack? We got some vehicle rules.
Vehicles. And this one kind of gets addressed in the new FAQ to a degree that kind of takes a little wind out of our sails on this one. But all we did was we had sectioned off the vehicles into light vehicles, medium vehicles, and heavy vehicles. And this was mostly to mitigate the ability of someone to suppress a tank with a small arms.
Yeah. Well, for the medium, that would be a medium vehicle is size 3 and 4. So that's the Striders getting suppressed and stuff like that. What they did in the FAQ was just make them not vehicles anymore, which it caused confusion because then people are like, but it's under the vehicle section. And at least this would just add another, it does complicate it slightly. But also the reason we had this rule is because we added heavy vehicles in. That's size 5+ vehicles. As you'll see later, we don't want to add those Warpath tanks and planes and stuff into the game. And, having size plus, 5+ sized vehicles, you had to have some, they're going to occupy more than one square. So you're going to have to start, making some rules for that. So, we did that too. Pretty much you divide the size over whatever, squares they occupy. So then you could determine who else could be in a square with them and things like that.
Yeah. And we've got a boatload of, dust.
Yes.
Vehicles, and some of them get kind of outlandish with their spider legs and their, you know, I don't know, they're not designed to be in a three-inch square, but if we're going to, you know, get crazy and put them on there, you have to kind of, you know, house rule where they're standing and how they work. So yeah, there's plenty of reasons to do that besides the be able to pin a vehicle, but yeah. Vehicles.
Yep. And the next section we have is actions. We added some new actions here. Well, just modified some new actions. The first one is breaking away for the movement. As it is now, one person gets to punch you on the way out as you escape. I think we decided it should be more than one person gets to stop you from running away if you have a bunch of people in your square with you. So we changed it to... it's half the enemies they face rounded up get to fight back. So if you have 3 enemies in a square with you, 2 of them get to fight you back. If you have 1 enemy, you get 1 fight back. Just to make it more realistic, because if there is 3 guys in a square and you're trying to run away from them, why does only 1 guy get to stop you? They should all just be trying to grab you. So, and that also to make it not everybody is because we wanted to make it so that it is still possible. So you don't get just piled on, but. It just make breaking away a bit more realistic. That's what that one was for.
And next we have vehicle movement. And this one has been completely neutered by the FAQ. It basically said since the Striders were man-sized or slightly bigger than man-sized, humanoid-shaped, they should be able to, you know, do the same maneuvering that a humanoid can do, which is going up and down levels and stuff like that. So,
they fixed it by taking vehicle away from them, but we just said, well, vehicles that look like humanoids should be able to do it. Use common sense.
Yeah, yeah. And it still holds because there's going to be different, hopefully there's going to be different things coming out that may fall into that category. We might have to use that, but no, it was addressed in the FAQ, so.
And the next one is the RR bugaboo that's always matters. It's the shoot skill that bases don't matter. And we've said it enough times. I don't think we have to say it more. It's we describe our thoughts on the matter, but yeah, you know what we think about this. Bases don't matter.
No. They're ballast. They are there to keep your model from falling over. Possibly for putting tokens beside or on, and that's it.
Yep. And we move on to the fight rule. We like the idea that fight doesn't end a turn. The rules committee went against this. They decided to make it the other way, that it does definitely end the turn, but cinematically, having a fight not end the turn, you can do some really interesting things with characters. And it kind of harkens back to version one where you could fight, and then if you tripled or doubled or whatever, you could keep going. This is kind of the same idea where you could still keep going even after a fight.
Yeah, very much so. Back to one of the things that made that kind of was like the hallmark of version one. The thing that, really made it stick out was when you could chain attacks. You could have two guys just slugging it out. We've had epic battles. I've said it before and I've said it again. Version one games, my favorite Dead Zone games that I've had, that I can remember and think of, the cinematic and the awesome, they're all version one games.
Yeah, when you get, it's a much more cinematic game, version one. Version two is much more of a tournament game.
Yeah, and I remember we had a plague swarm fighting. I think it was, might have been Blaine or someone underneath a train bridge, just wailing on each other for I don't know how long. And it just kept building on this knockdown Drago fight. And it was really, really interesting. And that's what that is. That's a little, we can slide that, like Rob said, we can add a little bit of some lubricant on there and slide that right in as a little spicing things up on anniversary night.
This metaphor is getting worse and worse. It was bad to begin with. And the next one, vehicles keep moving after fight. This is one that I think you thought of, Jack, when you're with Blaine with his scythes on his jet bike. Why does he stop after he slices into you? He's on a jet bike. He should just keep going. So you could do drive-bys with this rule.
Yeah. I think when we were looking at the – I think it was Blaine on the jet bike that has these big scythes on the side, and you'd think like chariot races, Ben-Hur, they didn't, the chariot didn't hit a soft target and then stop immediately. And it wasn't like it was on the nose, like a drill on the nose of something. It would be interesting that if you could hit a target as you passed by it with this big blade. So,
yeah. Yeah, especially now with the Veerman tunnel runners and things like that too, that have these big scythes. This is a rule that we want to see them just plowing through people,
just
cutting everybody up,
going down a line of people like zing 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 zing. Yep. Zing.
Yeah, Running Man style.
Running Man, or to a degree, maybe Death Race 2000.
Well, yeah, for sure. The next rule is the anti-coach rule. I like to think of this one as that. Coach, as everybody knows, loves to put his size 1 people on bridges that size 3 plus can't go on. And they actually changed the rules for that to be official. So this is kind of the offset to that. You can still not go on these bridges, but we're giving size 3 plus fighters, so any of those mostly be plague guys, giving them the plus 1 to their fight range. So they actually can fight one square away because their reach is quite long, so... You could just punch people, go underneath that bridge and knock the person right off that bridge.
Yeah, I think you say it's the anti-coach rule. I'm of the opinion that we probably thought it would be fun if someone could reach into a already filled up square and start wailing on someone with an aberration. I think the aberration's awesomeness, the look of the model and stuff, and the big beefy hands and the length of them, I think had inspired us. Like what in real life, something that big, what would he be able to do? And sure, reaching up on bridges was one of them, but there was a whole bunch of snares. We thought it'd be awesome if he could just punch one square over.
Yeah, we've also had situations where people are hiding in places that are only accessible for smaller size models. Remember when you were playing our friend Dave, he put a guy in a one of those cross section. We have it's all those X shaped battle zone terrain. In a square, it was holding up a building, but he snuck inside of there, and I remember your stage 1 couldn't get in there. So now he'd just be able to punch right through that, just punch into that square.
I don't want to correct you, and sound like a...
Oh, you were the one that was hiding?
Yeah, yeah. His first game, he smoked me like a Philly blunt. He took my plague list, and I took a Reb's List in version one. So right there, everyone can see what the folly of it. But I was teaching someone how to play the game, and whereas I thought a couple bold moves on my behalf would be fun and interesting, and he showed no mercy. He was not on the impression that this was a little fun learning experience, and I think within a couple two rounds, my leader was hiding in a.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
it was a shameful display, and I think if he never plays again, he's got the track record as being a 100% successful in all of his games.
Yes, he does that. He does lord that over you, but we'll see. So, what's the next one, Jack? I think this is the big one.
Bases don't matter.
No, we already did that one.
I think that one's the big one, though.
That is the big one. This is also a big one, though, that a lot of people are missing from version one.
So, Overwatch. I can see it. I've heard various arguments, pros, cons, whatever. But as an optional rule, putting Overwatch back into the game, this is a specific Overwatch. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but if you've played XCOM, you know the situational way that their Overwatch works, and it is that you put your guy, you put him in, you point him at something, say, I'm using my turn, he's in Overwatch, and next the enemy model that passes in front of him when he's in Overwatch, which means he's prepared, he's hunkered down, he's waiting in ambush. The next enemy model that passes by there, he gets to shoot at whenever that happens as a reaction.
And everyone in Overwatch who sees that model all have to fire. So you can throw people out there as sacrificial lambs if you want to add, you know, to make them all fire so you can move your guys up or whatever. But yeah, very XCOM, because that's the real way to do Overwatch. And it's still fun. And it may complicate the game slightly, but we like that.
And the thing is, right now, Dead Zone is not it's tactical, but it's not. There is no area denial. There's no defensive versus. It's really just two offensive factions smashing headlong into each other. Overwatch is one of those things where you could put two or three guys in Overwatch and say, okay. You'd be foolish to send someone through there because you're going to have three guys smashing that guy with a barrage. And so, now I have to go around that. I have to do, and as it stands right now with turrets and stuff like that, that don't get used. And it just seems like it'd be something that is lacking. No one uses Enforcer's turrets because if they had Overwatch,
yeah, you could put them up and deny areas, like you say, area denial.
Like aliens.
Like aliens, exactly. And the last rule we'll do before a break here is bailing out rules for vehicles. This is added because we are adding in a lot more large vehicles. So this is a way of getting people to get out of those vehicles without having to destroy them. But it also makes it so you can also steal other people's vehicles, which is we'll get to later. But you can scare people to bail out of their vehicle. Kind of, once again, most World War II games have this rule, so it's just something. If you are playing bigger games and you do having tanks on the field, maybe this is a fun way to add to that aspect into it. Because who doesn't want to see a Strider get bailed out and a little Veerman jump in there?
Oh, everyone wants to see that. A Veerman riding around in a Strider?
Obviously, I think.
I've seen it. I've seen the pictures. It's happened, so.
Well, we'll take a break here. We'll be back and finish talking about Unearthed Intel, which you can get at deadzonegame.podbean.com. And we'll be back soon.
For a low, low price of $5.63.
Or free, whichever comes first.
Countercharge. Countercharge. Charge is the first podcast totally dedicated to the game Kings of War. Join your hosts Andrew, Mark, and Rob as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War. You can find us on iTunes and at OhioHammer.com, a proud member of the Ohio Hammer Network of Podcasts.
This is Rob P. from Countercharge, and you're listening to Dead Zone, the podcast. This is Rob.
That was Finup. Terrible.
I know.
That was terrible.
All right. Hang on. That was the vanilla one. I'm going to do the exciting ones now.
And welcome back for those of you who've stuck around through what is essentially us reading like a story time. It's Betty by time. You can just listen to us read. We are in the midst of unearthed intel. We've scratched the surface. Now we're gonna get into some meaty stuff. And what's first in the middle, in the guts of unearthed intel?
Well, we did some changes to abilities, and the first one is spotter, because we've been saying this a long time that spotter, it was in version 1, and it was all right, but now we want to change it to version 2, kind of replace the tag rule and give more people a spotter rule, which would kind of work like similar to tag, where you get +1 dice if for people who have the spotter ability seeing other people. It would make things like survey drones and maybe engineers maybe more useful. So later on we'll have in our, we're going to talk about the factions, we'll list all the people we think should have spotter, but generally that's what we want. It would give more of those kind of people that aren't getting used a little bit more ability.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. Right now, there's 4 or 5 different ways to say spotter in the game, and that's kind of that redundancy needs to be addressed. But secondly, there's so many cool models that are the plays got guys that are pointing. The Veermen have guys with the big binoculars that have the big thing, you know, but you'll never see them on the board. So now give them something to do. Yeah. And next up we have Beast, which is just a modified version of Beast. And the nuts and bolts of it is it just deals with how beasts deal with objectives, that they should be able to deny them but not take them. That some beasts should be able to operate, like pick up items and stuff, in so much as the way as a dog would retrieve your paper from the end of the driveway. But it just goes into some of the aspects of beast that can be fun in certain search situations. You could throw that house rule in to mix some things up, especially with armies that are, say, all a beast-themed army or something like that, just to turn on some Barry White, put a red handkerchief over the lamp.
Yep, for sure. And next build is Hover. Hover was first introduced in the Mars Attacks Dead Zone beta list, and we talked about that in team building exercise, and we really liked it. But we have a few tweaks for it. Hover pretty much lets you go up a level for people who have hover and move over gaps and things like that. And it has to end in a place that can be physically placed on the gaming table. That was the thing. But the way we modified it is it's saying that hover model should always be 1 cube higher than its base. So it'll have a flight stand, say. So it'll be always 1 cube higher to show that it's actually in the air, not actually landing every round. Because the idea of, especially a flying saucer from Mars Attacks, just having to land every round makes no sense. So, yeah, flight bases. That's really what Hover will introduce.
Right. It doesn't add a whole complexity of a three-dimensional above the physical. It is just literally one square above. So it's like a hovercraft. It has to kind of follow the contours. But it's just that one square. So then that allows you to place it over top of, say, occupied squares. You can do things sort of like flyers do since the FAQ. But it doesn't mean you have to always be every turn. If you go one square, you have to land. That's it.
Yep. And it kind of helps flying vehicles also avoid getting melee attacked, because it'd be harder to get at them. Other than if you're using the rule that the 3-plus size creatures have a longer reach, they can punch up and knock a plane out of the air. But generally, it'll keep those flyers away from being melee attacked, because really, flyers probably shouldn't have people punching them.
And it does make sense that if they are on the ground, if you do physically land, then yes, someone could go up with a T-Rex arm and a tiny jeweler's hammer and smash on the windshield, but not if you're supposed to be flying over the battlefield doing something like strafing. So next we have strafe, or as the Americans say it, strafe. The aircraft with this ability, that got a laugh out of you.
I was wondering, how do the Americans say strafe? They say it differently.
My God, you're a tough nut to crack with comedy, and I never thought. Okay. And excuse me. So basically, strafing, for anyone who doesn't know that the terminology is, when an aircraft passes over at a high rate of speed and just peppers the area with rounds, or say you can strafe with a machine gun, anything that has a high volume of projectiles and moving quickly to kind of like a whole area of destruction. And the basics of it, I think for this would be 4 vehicles, but it lends itself to other things. And it's just a line that where the vehicle starts to where it ends, you get to make multiple attacks on the squares as it moves along. Really simple stuff, but I think would be highly fun.
And it does hit, it has to be a straight line across the entire board, and it hits all models, enemy and friendly. So you'd have to like try to figure out, okay, if I could do this line, okay, I only hit one of my guys, but I hit 3 of your guys. But if I do this one, I hit more, you know, I make it more your guys, but I'm hitting more of my guys. And it's kind of fun. And it's mostly, in place for flyers, because we do want to introduce flyers into this game, like the, enforcer, interceptors and the, why can I never remember the GCPS one's name? You always remember it.
You'll never remember Hornet ever.
Yes.
But I think if we named it something comical, you would never forget it.
That's true. We'll have to think of something to call the Hornet so I remember it.
Okay.
This next rule is similar, because once again, we want models to, with these bigger vehicles, will have transport abilities. So we have a transport X, and X represents how many people can be in the vehicle. And how many people, like how many troops it can transport. And I think this is similar to, is it maybe even Warpath? One of the games anyways, where the people in the vehicle, if the vehicle gets destroyed, the people are, they get killed too, but they can be dropped off. And it takes, I think we said it takes a short action to jump out of the vehicle. And, or a normal move to get out of the vehicle. So it's kind of, way to bring people onto the board, especially if you're playing multiple map boards. You can use mules or hornets or interceptors with the transports and fly them across the board to drop them off, do quick attacks and things like that. So yeah, transport.
Okay. And next up is, It Burns, but it's a modified It Burns. Excellent.
It's burns. you're punny today.
I am. And you know what? You've invigorated me with your laughter.
It's true. Usually I'm pretty stone faced against your humor.
Stoic and jaded and almost acidic in your nature. And now I know that there's a little crack.
It's the heat. It's muddled my brain.
You're sweltering in the heat. Okay. So anyways, the modified It Burns, the flamethrowers, things that have It Burns, fill the squares between the weapon and the target with the fire. As you would say with a real flamethrower, whatever jelly or flaming goo or whatever. And basically, it's kind of like a, much like Strafe. It's one of those things that, when everything's going right, could be really, really powerful, or it could go really, really horribly wrong.
And also, this is a way for denial of area too, because you can just fire into squares and set them on fire to stop people from going that way too. Because that is, as it is now, you have to hit somebody to burn the square. But with this, you can just fire and target a square.
You just fill a couple squares down an alley with fire and say, okay, come on.
Yeah.
You can try and swoop around that way, but now you have to go and suffer the consequences.
Yeah. We also modified some items. We thought of the idea for anti-vehicle weapons and anti-personnel weapons. Pretty much the opposite. One is obviously better against vehicles. Once again, we're introducing vehicles in the game. We need some things that are more powerful against vehicles. And anti-personnel weapons are things that it's hard to hit somebody so small as a person, such as things like missile launchers, the big equalizer guns and stuff like that. It's hard to actually hit a person with something so big, but against a vehicle, they're really effective. So they'd add extra dice against, or it's actually, you get, anti-vehicle weapons would get -2 dice for shooting non-vehicles. So you lose dice if you're shooting against non-vehicles. It's harder to hit them. And the opposite's true with the anti-personnel. If you're shooting flamers or any kind of energy bows or melee weapons against a tank, you get -2 dice because most likely it's not going to do much damage. They're for soft targets. And I think it's just a little bit more variety in the things, and to be able to deal with vehicles on the board. It would encourage you taking things like missile launchers and equalizers and dead packs and things if you knew that you're going to get against some tanks. And right. Get more variety.
It addresses some of the situations that will arise once we introduce vehicles to Dead Zone, but also kind of ground some of this other stuff a little bit, and then makes you want to take some troops that you don't usually take. So after that, so that's anti-vehicle weapons and anti-personnel weapons. It's the same dealio, just two sides of the different coin. But after that, we have scavenging the battlefield. And what this is normally when you pick up an item, you know how that functions in the game. When you have equipment, however, the equipment now acts like an item. So the world's greatest scavengers, the Veermen, they have a gun that shoots a maximum of 2 squares for whatever reason, yet they'll walk past a tag rifle. Not anymore. And I think that's kind of self-explanatory why that would be fun to be able to do that, to have someone, a troop walk over and pick up a weapon from a fallen enemy and then have the ability to use it. It'd be interesting anyways.
Yeah, and to keep it less housekeeping and less chits on the board, if you kill somebody in the fight action, that you'll be able to grab their weapon because it's going to be right at your feet. But we said pretty much if it's killed any other way, it's lost in the detritus of the battlefield. But yeah, it's a way to get, yeah, like you say, if you run up and a Khaleesi clubs a enforcer with tag or a pathfinder, all of a sudden you get a Khaleesi with a tag rifle. That might be kind of fun.
Right, right. And the assumption is that you've dropped the weapon you have. It's not like you have both now.
No.
So it's,
yeah, you always can only have one weapon.
So in the very rare circumstances that you have engaged someone in close combat, you have succeeded, you have the option to swap out the weapon, have both, and then you can then proceed. Doesn't happen a whole hell of a lot, but it would be fun if you could.
And like I say, Veermen really benefit from that because they're better fighters, but they can shoot. So you get the guys in there, a bunch of Veermen jump on somebody and grab their weapon. So energy shield. It's energy shield X. So X is the amount of dice you can prevent. It used to be the way energy shield works, it didn't make much sense because the less dice you roll, it was more likely it would explode. But this, you're rolling, instead you do a 3-dice 4+ test and you have to make 1 success for each wound you want to prevent. And you can choose to how many wounds you want to prevent. If you fail this though, it still explodes. So you have to make sure you got 3 dice to make 4+. That's a pretty good chance, but it still has a chance to explode. But the good thing is that if you have an energy shield 2 and you got shot once, you only have to roll one die. So roll one test. So it's 3 dice, 4+. But if you get shot and you get 2 potential damage and you use both of them, you have to roll each test separately. So there's a chance that you get the failure and it would explode. But I think it works a little bit more clearly this way. It's going back to making tests instead of just working. The way it worked before was a little strange. It didn't really apply to the Dead Zone rules. So I think this works a little bit better.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but I think it's closer to the rest of the rule set than the way the energy shields work.
Yeah.
And next we have thermal mines and debt packs. And the idea is that even after the FAQ, they still function as a hand-to-hand weapon for the most part. It's better now. Some of them have the blast and stuff, but we were toying with the idea that they're more so something that would be like a mine or something that you would set with proxy fuse and stuff. So this is just basically a booby trap almost rather than a hand-to-hand.
Yeah, it's not just a club.
Item. Yeah, like a club.
Yeah, it's the way it is now, it's just like, yeah, you club people with it, but instead you could throw them or set them, and it's a Frag 3 explosion instead of just hitting someone with a grenade, popping them in the head like a rock.
Yeah, so imagine if you had a finite amount of tokens that each one that had and you would be able to then put a couple in the squares or put them on something, and then, okay, there you go, and you walk away. Now anyone who goes near it, that'd be fun.
And we'll move on. We do have some new mission ideas that we've thought of. We do have some zombie alternate rules. The zombie rules in Infestation, the new Infestation, seemed a little complex. And we wanted to have a different way to make it random how many zombies spawn. So once again, you're making a 3 dice, 7+ test. We like the idea of tests to see how things work. And each success gets a zombie, and 8 do explode. So you could have a ton of zombies all of a sudden showing up. And it's kind of more fun. We found the infestation with certain races, especially certain factions. It was just too easy. Like, the zombies had no chance. So this would be a way to make it.
Whoever playtested that, they fell down. They dropped the ball there.
Well, we did playtest it. We did say that it was too easy. And I remember we doubled up the zombies at one game, and we still were able to win. Like, it was... I think it was Pathfinders we were using, and they were just mowing down zombies like nothing.
Yeah, and it was there's a pretty formulaic way that the zombies worked, and there wasn't the rush of adrenaline that we like, and so our alternate rules basically just randomize stuff to a degree that there's going to be some soiled britches at times where it just.
Yeah, because we also randomized where the zombies show up on the board, too, just like we do with crates. So you're doing the X-axis and the Y-axis, so all of a sudden these zombies might show up right beside you, crawling out of the sewers.
And next we have scour missions, and much like this is something that Coach, when he first heard it, was like, okay, that's brilliant. And he immediately did a battle report showing how well this works. It's kind of a no-brainer. Instead of your models having to take the caches that they take off the battlefield and then take the model off the board, they take the item to a designated location, and that's it. That's a drop-off point. Your model doesn't leave the board. You're able to then go back out and grab some more goodies.
Yeah, it's like a little cache. And you can, if the enemy gets close enough, they could steal stuff out of your cache and stuff, so you have to protect it. It's just, yeah, the idea of grabbing something and running off the board, a lot of factions cannot win that, because they just don't have enough people. Like, that's fine for, like, well, I guess Veerman or maybe Rebs or someone who have a lot of people, or you can get some Zs doing it, but try Forge Fathers. There's only five of them on the board. You can't get enough stuff off to make it worth your while.
Your strike force has four guys in it. The lowest point value of the lowest guys, like 15 points, and you're going to, I'm going to get 1 point by going off the board. Well, you're never going to do it.
Yeah.
You're never going to do it.
You're going to just try to kill your enemy, and that's it.
This way, if you have a couple nearby, you can grab it, put it in your deployment area, and then move around a bit more. Keep on trucking. Do that Forge Father shuffle.
We also have some new game types. Back in the version 1, we did indoor search and seizure rules. We did a bat rep about that. It was pretty much you go to each room and you're trying to find something and get it out before your enemy does. And we did those. We modified them for version 2, so we have those in here. Pretty self-explanatory, I think. Not much more to go into that. It's a pretty detailed way how it works, but you have to read it to understand. But just a new way to play Dead Zone.
Yeah.
And also, Jack invented something called civilian rules. Jack, please.
Yeah, this is a rough... this was something that if there were people, civilians trapped into the Dead Zone in the battle area where the two strikes teams meet, how they would react. And it was basically to add for theatrical games, not necessarily a tournament game, but like a game where there's a story to be told or whatever. And it is basically, it has skills and it's laid out in the same way that version one used to do things that they don't do anymore. But if there's civilians on the battlefield, it's how they would react to the strike teams moving around and how you can gain points by helping them escape if you want to, or if you kill them. So then you could opt to, if you really wanted to win the game, you could start killing these civilians for very small gains. But for, some people are greasy like that. So that's what that is.
And I think you added in random things too. So you'd get a random secret objective. So one faction might be there to kill those civilians, but the other faction's trying to save them, or they both might be there to kill them. So it's really interesting way to, a different way to play the game once again, because you can just, you're there to all these civilians on the board. You're trying to save them or try to kill them. And the other teams, you're trying to stop the other team and try to deal with civilians. We played it and it worked so well. And I was so impressed with it. It changed the game so dramatically. It was so much fun.
Again, for version one with the secret missions, you had the cards and stuff. It's more laid out like that, where then you would not, your team had a certain secret mission. It doesn't work like that way in Dead Zone anymore, but.
Well, there's secret missions in Dead Zone too.
Yeah, but remember we had the little card and then
but it's just the difference of a card or no card, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, and then it was a whole thing, but yeah.
You're just obsessed with version one.
I liked version one.
You're the one person.
Everyone else hated version one?
Pretty much. Version two is much better. But we also have some faction fixes we added in. There's some things that we liked that once again in version one, things like you can have more than one leader, and you just have to say which one has is your actual leader, so you get the command dice and the splat from them. But I remember Jack used to run a stage three and a stage three A general and a stage one, so because you wanted stage one as the puncher, but he wanted the general's ability, so you should be able to do that. And that's one of the fixes. And also, once again, we always talk about this, but some mercs work for only one faction, so those should be called heroes. We put a whole list of all the heroes in the game so far. And we also wanted to have the ability to have more than one merc in a team, so you could have, for example, Nastanza working with Blaine on your strike team. Of course, you're going to pay out the nose to have those guys, but it might be fun.
Right. And it lends itself to making, if you wanted to, strike teams of mercs against strike teams of mercs, or it'd be fun and interesting if you said, okay, I'm going to, if we're using these alternate rules and then show up with the right now as it stands, they're all broken. Like Nastanz is not comparative, even points wise, or in no way, shape, or form. Is it the same as some, say, a Quisiac, whatever, Kish? That they're like they're not, it never really work out. But you could tell your opponent, yeah, I'm going to bring some mercs. Let the fun ensue.
Yeah. Also, this is hopefully future proofing when they finally do fix the mercs and make them more fix their points, or at least fix them.
You can
bring a bunch.
And next, stolen vehicles. Now, we discussed this in vehicles, but basically, after so much damage, you can have your guys can be forced to bail out. And this just means that some brave soul, an enemy, can then hijack that that vehicle by leaping into it. And then imagine the fun of, say, a Veerman riding around in a Strider with like a heavy chem thrower on one arm and like a double drills on the other. I don't know how
switch weapons somehow.
Yeah, in between where the original occupant leapt out and then the Veerman jumped in, it was a whole rebuild. But, you know, that's not let's not dwell on the small.
Yeah. Speaking of Striders, we also want more variety in what Striders can hold. So we're thinking no Strider should have no weapon should take 2 heart points. So if you want a guy with if you want to pay the points and have a guy with two what do they call it, the equalizers or 2 chainsaws or whatever, go for it. And we said that if you do add 2 weapons of the same type, you give if it's a melee weapon you get frenzy 1. Or add 1 to existing frenzy, or if it's gun, you get weight of fire 1, or add 1 to weight of fire. So it just makes it that you're shooting a lot more on the battlefield.
Yeah, basically we're modeling animals, and we just made a whole bunch of Striders that literally you cannot use in the game. So it would be nice to be able to use the atrocities that we built.
Plus, this a lot of dust models have the same weapon in each shoulder or whatever, so. This is a dust thing, too. And we also have allied rules, because King's War has it, so why can't the old Dead Zone? And pretty much it's a point premium to get models from other groups, and only certain people can ally with other groups, so you can't have an enforcer allying with a plague or something like that. But we're banging around the idea so that you have a 50% tax hike to get somebody. Because we did like the First Strike novel with the GCPS and the Enforcers working together. So that's the kind of thing we want to see.
Yeah, when you start getting bigger point games and you start just envisioning like the world is your oyster where you can just start doing stuff like that, then you're like, okay, well, I've got my Strike Force at my 500 points that I've got my Strike Force that I want, and I've got this left laying in here in the... I don't want to leave any money on the table. Wouldn't it be nice if I got a toy from some other strike team to play with, something that you could make some pairings with, you know, then you start just imagining, just imagine.
Yep. And then we go into the factions. We have all the vehicles from Warpath, pretty much we've added to their factions. And you can go into the list and see all that. We won't go over all the vehicles, but...
Yeah, no, we basically statted out the Accuser, Interceptors, all the Forge Father, like the APC and stuff. It's just reams and reams of new vehicles to use as you see fit.
Yeah. We did change some things for some groups. Like we added, we did fix the Assault Enforcer, but we have a little bird tells us that might be, coming a new FAQ anyways, so that might be something that's no longer needs to fix. But we also add new troops to the enforcers, such as Enforcer Medic, to encourage people to use those guys, and gave Spotter to the Enforcer Engineer. Once again, we want to get people that don't usually get used. And with the Forge Fathers, we added something to the Inferno Drill that Coach we spoke about, I think, in the original Forge Father one, about how the vehicles can't see anything.
Yeah, yeah. That's always been his thing, how they're not maneuverable enough to be used in Dead Zone as it stands, and how they just can't ever get the line of sight. And this was a fix to make the the Inferno Drill kind of deadly herb.
And it's working with the spotter ability of the Broker Engineer. So it's the Broker Engineer and the Inferno Drill can just shoot right through buildings and stuff, which is kind of cool. And obviously now we gave the Broker Engineer the spotter ability with them, with the GCPS. They're not officially out yet, but we did their vehicles. And they also added Corporation Medic, we think should be a troop. All the medics we think should be troops, give more likely to use them.
Yeah, yeah. As it stands right now, anything with medic doesn't get used at all, and it certainly wouldn't get used as when it's a specialist that's taking up with troop a troop tax. And, yeah. So, like, it really, I understand that you want to use the best models and stuff, but if you bought a pack of models and you went, I really like this medic, no, good. You might as well put a little dress on it and put it in your Malibu Barbie dream castle, because it's not, if you're not, no one's going to use it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
And for the plague, we added the 3A loader, got the spotter ability, and we gave Murderbirds the glide and hover. So Jack always said they should have glide, and now we have the new hover ability, so that's pretty good for those guys. And, yeah.
It could, what could have been, we were allowed to play test the Murderbirds early, and, Rob was busy and I did some play testing, and by the time I got my cohesive laid out, it was already too late in their event, but the Murderbirds with the flight that they had were all right. But once I added glide to that, then they really became a real fun dynamic. They really like jazzed them up. It was like a little bam of fun, but it was already too late.
Yeah. And the bursters, we think, should, when they kill someone with their boom ability, should turn the people killed into zombies. That would make them so much more crazy. Because, yeah, we want more zombies on the board.
Said no one ever.
And we also added stats to sword spawn, which, once again, might be stolen. But I'm sure ours is slightly different. This is the DZTP version of Sorek sword spawn.
Yeah. Yet again, there might be a mole, a kind of a situation where we might know that the sword spawn might be making a triumphant return.
And also new troops. We said that Z, Sorex, Jud 1 medics, and Survey drones should all be troops for the Rebs, because you'd never take them. So might as well make them troops. Maybe it may more chance to use those beautiful models.
The Sorak, such a good looking model, and as a specialist with that gun, that's nonsense. But then some of these other ones with the survey drone.
Why is that not a troop?
It's.
And we're also giving the spotter ability to survey drone to make them actually useful, because right now they do absolutely nothing. And a sphere loader, because he's a loader. You should have binoculars.
Can anyone really say that they've used a survey drone in the last? And the model is so neat. It looks like a little glider with the camera at the bottom, or if that's a gun, I don't know. But you could really jazz it up, put it on a little flight stand. No one ever uses it.
And we also thought the Reb should also have defender shields. Very rare, but we want to see some defender shields in more places. For the Veermen, we added a whole new Broodmother, because before the fix in the Veermen beta list, the Veermen Broodmother sucked. So we made the Queen Mother, and she makes little whelplings. She births things as she goes. Little teeny whelplings.
Yeah, nothing says disgusting like just disgorging out of the belly little baby rats that would, throughout the game, just keep spilling out onto the field and scurrying about.
Yeah. And we also added, as an official thing, the Veerman Strider. Jack's Strider is now officially in the podcast version of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And soon to be the actual game. I think...
it's only a matter of time.
It takes, very little campaigning, and someone would... I'm looking at the picture right now, and... I think Ronnie himself would be hard pressed not to think that was the best thing that ever happened to Dead Zone since I don't know, Command Dice.
We also had all the tunnelers and the tunnel runner, which now is officially in the game, but we did our version of it. I don't know how close it is. I'd be curious to see how close it is. But, yeah. And we're winding up here. We did make some new factions. We did the Daughters of the Crucible, which is, the toughest girls in the galaxy from Raging Heroes. I got their miniatures that are, they're like nuns with guns. So I made a faction out of them. And originally, the GCPS, back before they had rules, I made a GCPS list. So I just modified it to the Spiral Architect Corporation Marines. They're a new Corporation Marine list. So you can check all those guys out. And last but not least, we did Dust Zone. We statted up every single, miniature for Dust. So if you have a lot of Dust miniatures like we do, here's a way to play those in, our version of Dead Zone. So please do check that out. And I think that covers it, Jack. What do you think?
I think I want to use my heavy flak grenadiers, as I don't know, maybe enforcers or maybe even like a...
Well, they got their own stats. You can use them as heavy flak you can have the, what are they called? Were they Axis? Are they called that in Dust? You can have your own faction of Axis guys running on the board.
Even the gorillas.
Yep, even the gorillas.
A gorilla with a Panzerfaust is just a thing of beauty.
Well, this has been a long one, but we thought we had to make it special for the unveiling of Unearthed Intel. So please, if you like this kind of stuff, tell your friends, download the Unearthed Intel, test it out. We know it's not perfect, but test it out.
Oh God, no. No, I just looking through, I'm like, oh, there's a spelling mistake.
That kind of stuff. But I mean, also the rules themselves aren't perfect.
Yeah, no, it is as slipshod as it gets, but, is also damn fun.
Yep. And if you have any ideas, let us know. So email us. Maybe we'll have a version 2 out there if we get enough, submissions. And, please do, check out our Patreon. You can go to the Patreon if you just search for Dead Zone the Podcast there. And if you like what we're doing, throw us a buck. Cause, we like doing it and we'd like to keep doing it. And the more money we get, the more likely we'll continue doing it.
And we probably should have put that before we just bored the hell out of everyone with what we just did. But, maybe next time. And really, you know what? We've got some special things cooking up for our Patreon friends. The Pats and Monocles Club are going to get the love that they deserve quite soon. There's going to be some it's borderline pornographic what's going to happen to you people.
Maybe once we get a 3D printer, we'll print out some top hats to put on our nameless so that we'll send them out to all our Patreons so they too can top hat their nameless.
That sounds more like a curse than anything else.
Well, until next time, I've been Rob.
And I'm Jack.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with team building exercise. Is it Enforcers we're doing this month? I believe it is. So until then, please keep listening. Please. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Zone Podcast. I have been your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen. Visit the website, deadzonegame.podbean.com. Email your hosts at deadzonepodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow the show at Dead Zone Podcast. The Dead Zone Podcast is a production of Vinland Old Time Radio Productions. You have been listening to the Dead Zone Podcast. And now, a word from the fine folks at Vinland Old Time Radio.
So, you're listening to the Dead Zone Podcast, and if you find us funny and you enjoy our sense of humor and you think that you'd like a little more entertainment, please visit us at Vinland Old Time Radio. Found where, Rob?
VinlandOldTimeRadio.podbean.com. It's where the funny lives.